Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 17. The Davy Jones Liquors and the Plaid and Switches were set to have a go at one another at 10 o'clock, though when I got there about 9, the place was already a roiling carnival. I shuffled in and bought some popcorn, grabbing a seat in the bleachers, high enough to get a good, thorough perspective all around the track, but low enough to hear the girls hissing and filthy mouths. The place was crowded with heavily that tattooed people. The MC demographic had an impressive showing, for example, as did the dark college bohemes and the chain-smoking high school kids and a general array of dirt track shit kickers. But there was a good count of family night out examples, too. The concessions were briskly selling. I didn't see any of the bookmakers. I didn't care about the actual results of my bet, but these bookmakers were relevant to the case, it seemed, whether they showed up or not. I could see some of the liquors out through the back doors near where the lockers and showers were situated, and I could see some of the out-of-town team, too, in black and white plaid kilts and brown shirts. The way the old warehouse was retrofitted, both teams had to use the same locker room facilities. I confessed to myself that the women's unaffiliated banked track circuit was now right up there in my book with ice hockey. Major league. Or minor. By match time, the place was a complete zoo, and already about hip deep in spilled beer. The Seattle team's fans didn't have far to travel for this one, and their showing was as strong as the local fans. The air was shimmery with crowd's electricity, and when the composite rubber wheels hit that lacquered lumber track, it lit up that energy and it arced through the crowd. It was loud as hell, deafening, even though there weren't any combustion engines readying to race, it sounded like it. First out rolled the Platin. They were shouted out by the woman with the whistle and the PA helm. Next came the Liquors in blue and gray, motley and lace. Both teams were on deck, and both fans' sets were going ape shit. Beyond cacophonous, I saw Kitty and Sandy. They looked hot. Hell, they all looked hot, and it made the whole place look hot. Made the whole place hot. Hot, hot. Looked hot, was hot. My mouth nearly watered at all those legs and plaid and tail. Many people did drool. If not foam, and the beer spilled in there went from hips deep to tits deep in a flash. When the pack got underway, the rubber on track's thunder remained a steady high decibel threshold for the room. This was a scene for screaming and bullhorns, not any sort of quiet, candlelit conversation. The skaters moved finessely, like road-wise truckers working both the traffic and their clutches. I realized quickly the real powerful caliber and potential of these women all balled up and traveling with no fear at a high velocity. They were basically lethal projectiles, each one of them. Right after a whistle marked the start of the first jam, one of the Platin took some sort of blow to the muzzle, but she just toweled off and got back on the track, even though she was still dripping a bit. The first bloodied Platin didn't deliver her own retribution, although a couple of her teammates subsequently hemmed up Sandy, giving her an elbow to the face. While Sandy toweled off her mug, another Liquor took over as the lead jammer, and after this initial quid pro quo activity, the team's territory seemed properly marked, and all the off-the-books messages had been sent. Anyway, this all had certainly ginned up the crowd. There were a few incidental tumbles during the rest of the first period, but I saw no more headshots connected, at least not until what happened afterward in the parking lot. And I was pretty jazzed up after all the fun of watching the game, like the rest of the crowd, a light, post-coital sort of mild summer night elation, which made what happened next out in the parking lot all the more surreally batshitty. Expecting smooth vinyl, everyone was wide awake but relaxed and slowly making their way out of the starlit warehouse, finishing their beers and chatting. tailgating, basically. As soon as the Lickers and the Plattons were able to get out of their skates, they were also trickling out into the lot, moving on with their own evenings, which had just begun. Of course, I was more or less hell-bent to get over to Sandy's, and I didn't see her or Kitty, but several of the other skaters had already made their way outside. There was a commotion at the far side of the parking lot, at the end of the lot closest to I-5. I just figured it was a generic parking lot brawl of some sort or another, so at first I didn't bother. But the disturbance continued and spread and got louder, and it became pretty clear pretty quickly that it was basically some sort of pack attack by the way the crowd was moving and responding to action in several locations at once, which is confusing and dangerous. And then it became clear who the pack was. The chino-wheeled beavers were there, armed with both blunt and sharp objects of all kinds, and because they were in their furry-fied form, they had at their disposal their very sharp claws and teeth also. People were fighting back. Some were having some success, but some weren't. I realized the situation had become one in which I was about to start trying to pick off drowned zombie wolf ladies with my service weapon. I had 17 rounds on my hip, a couple of extra clips of my coat, and a backup roller on my ankle if it got that deep. First, I quickly called into dispatch, and I told them to roll whatever they had available in my direction. Ricky Thompson here, up off I-5 at the Davy Jones Liquors warehouse. We've got a yard brawl underway out here in the parking lot, and I'm about to have to start shooting people. There's an armed pack. I don't know who really up here, but a sizable group has attacked the crowd in the parking lot, and it's dark, and it's loud, and I can't see. After the game is ended, I said, refraining from saying wolf ladies over the air. During the few seconds I was on the phone, one of the wolf ladies had apparently buggered with the wrong tailgater, and I heard a shotgun blast, which punctuated the urgency of the situation to the dispatcher on the other end of the line. Okay, Thompson, they'll be there in a few minutes. And over the phone, before I hung up, I heard the tone out begin. And then I heard another shotgun blast, and I looked up to see the dude with it standing on the cab of his truck that was parked right next to a faded, waterlogged-looking ambulance, which I realized was the Beaver's ambulance. Somehow, these Chino furries had gotten the thing running again, and after freeing themselves from the morgue and stealing it back from the Alameda boys, Alameda County boys who had fished it and them out of the bay, and now it was full of buckshot. And the furry zombie bitch whom the guy had shot at now had no head, but her hairy body was still running around, bumping into cars and people she was not making out well. And a crowd of fans descended on her quickly and violently and easily, blinded as she was, and dragged her off. I trotted over to the ambulance and looked inside. There was nobody in there. I scurried up onto the top of it, pulled out my pistol and gave a nod to the guy with the shotgun to my side. He was facing one way and I faced the other way, and he pointed off to my right, and I saw a furry jumping up and down on something, or probably somebody, and right then I heard someone else unloading somewhere behind me, somewhere out in front of the shotgun guy. And I drew a bead on the jumping furry to my right. It looked like the round had struck her square in the back. Knocked her forward and knocked her down, dropped her, but she stood back up and turned around and looked up at me and started coming my way. Persevered. I put another round in her front side and it stopped her and it knocked her on her back, but she got up again. This time she ran toward me, closing the distance quickly, and she swiftly jumped up on top of the ambulance, so I jumped off and the guy behind me removed her head with his shotgun. She fell off but stood yet again headless, and then she was quickly covered up and hauled off by a vengeful, lusty mass of the living. A good stream of vehicles were leaving, but not at the lazy-daisy pace at which they had originally been leaving the event. Quite a few had stayed to fight, and at the same time, many, many, many were unabashedly, understandably, and extremely rapidly fleeing this wicked wheels-off, wacky-ass park-and-come nightmare scene. Glorious pandemonium. I scanned the crowd, trying to find, in order to mitigate, the most serious of things going on at the moment. The guy with the shotgun had left the top of his pickup truck and headed into the crowd, presumably to do the same thing. It helped that the parking lot had thinned out a little, but it was still a crowded and confused mess, and I could hear all sorts of mayhem. people screaming horrifying screams, in all likelihood for legitimately horrifying reasons. Probably, I thought to myself, there will be a sizable handful of wolverized civilians in addition to a few dead wolf ladies when the smoke clears here. About that time, the first sirens arrived at the parking lot, and I walked up to one of the units and borrowed the radio. There's a guy here with a shotgun. He blew the heads off two of the furry things, and one of them I'd already shot a handful of times, so watch out for that. I'm recommending headshots. High caliber. Besides myself and the guy with the shotgun, there's at least one other person in this crowd who's discharged a weapon. No, I don't know who it is. Basically, two furries down for sure, headless, and I don't have a civilian casualty count at all. The incident commander declared himself and affirmed my traffic, and the officer whose radio I borrowed nodded and went to the trunk of his vehicle, grabbing his own shotgun. EMTs, who had just arrived and had begun combing the crowd for the injured. It was about 11:45, and the scene had thinned out yet further as a steady stream of people continued to have had escaped the scene. Fewer and fewer remained. There were a couple of more skirmishes, and by just after midnight, when the smoke fully cleared, any and all surviving furries were gone. There were four furry bodies in the parking lot, two of them headless, and the heads of the other two just fully bashed in. There may have been more dead furries, but if there were, they weren't here. And there were about two dozen superficially injured people, and there were three people who had to be transported for further medical. We counted seven dead civilians on the scene, and it was unknown if anyone else were flagged or dragged off and now missing. We were at the warehouse location until about 3 a.m, until all the medical transports cleared the scene, gathering reports or contact information from everyone who had not run off and putting a toe on vehicles orphaned by the incident. This included the Beaver's ambulance, our possession of which I considered to be no less than an invite for them to burgle our tow lot or hang around, generally loiter unwelcome. We had to do something with it, and it's not very protect and survey. Dump it in the lake. Probably the worst thing to do with it would have been to leave it there. And of the four dead, re-dead furries who didn't walk away from the parking lot scene, all of them had been spontaneously gang-raped by members of the crowd during the melee, suggesting I'm not sure what all potentially vast sociological and physiological implications regarding the human condition and pack mentality when besieged by rabid wolf women. At least said lot when they're derby fans. We bagged up the four fallen furries and sent them Dixie's way, along with the seven slain non-werewolves. Also an act of borrowing trouble, but like the wicked ambulance, we had to do something with them.